Congratulations to those two. VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear a report about artificial intelligence from Dan Novak. Faith Krullo answers a question from an English learner in Vietnam. We close with the American story, The Line of Least Resistance, by Edith Wharton. But first, the vaquita is one of the smallest members of the dolphin and whale family. Today, the animal is in danger of disappearing. The World Wildlife Fund estimates that about 10 vaquitas are left in the world. Last September, scientists found 2 baby vaquitas in the wild. The discovery was a sign of hope, but biologists fear that more vaquitas die each year than are born. A vaquita is about 1.5 meters long. Its name means little cow in Spanish. The mammals only live in the northern part of the Gulf of California, in Mexico. They are most often found close to the coast and quickly swim away if a boat nears them. The creatures were first discovered by humans in 1958. They can live for at least 21 years. Females are believed to give birth every other year to a single offspring between February and April. The vaquita population was estimated to be about 600 in 1997. The organization Save the Vaquita said the population decreased 90% between 2011 and 2016. Vaquitas are often caught in fishing nets used to catch fish such as totoaba. Fishermen catch the endangered totoaba illegally for its swim bladder, which they then sell to China at high prices. In China, the swim bladders are used in cooking and are believed to have medicinal value. In 2017, the Mexican government banned the use of such nets in the area to help save the vaquita. In January, the Mexican Navy and the environmental group Sea Shepherd began a campaign to protect the rare animal's habitat in the Gulf of California. To prevent illegal fishing, local fishermen must pass a government inspection. But the Reuters news agency recently reported that it observed fishermen entering the sea in places where they could avoid inspection. Zach Smith is a director with the Natural Resources Defense Council. He said there was always a good story to be told about what was being done for the vaquita. But, he said, as soon as the cameras go away or the interest of the parties fade, all of those efforts go back to where they were.
Scientists who make artificial intelligence, or AI systems, say they have no problem designing ones that make good predictions for business decisions. But they are finding that the AI may need to explain itself through another algorithm to make such tools effective for the people who use them. AI is an area of computer science which aims to give machines abilities that seem like human intelligence. Explainable AI, or XAI, is a new field that has received a lot of investment. Small, new companies and large technology companies are competing to make complex software more understandable. Government officials in the United States and European Union also want to make sure machines' decision-making is fair and understandable. Experts say that AI technology can sometimes increase unfair opinions about race, gender, and culture in society. Some AI scientists think explanations are an important way to deal with that. Over the last 2 years, U.S. government agencies, including the Federal Trade Commission, have warned that AI, which is not explainable, could be investigated. The European Union could also pass the Artificial Intelligence Act next year. That law would require explanations of AI results. Supporters of explainable AI say it has helped increase the effectiveness of AI's use in fields like healthcare and sales. For example, Microsoft's LinkedIn Professional Networking Service earned 8% more money after giving its sales team AI software. The software aims to predict the risk of a person canceling a subscription, but the software also provides an explanation of why it makes a prediction. The system was launched last July. It is expected to be described on LinkedIn's website. But critics say explanations of AI predictions are not trustworthy. They say the AI technology to explain the machine's results is not good enough. Developers of explainable AI say that each step in the process should be improved. These steps include analyzing predictions, creating explanations, confirming them, and making them helpful for users. But after 2 years, LinkedIn said its technology has already created value. It said the proof is the 8% increase in money from subscription sales during the current financial year. Before the AI software, LinkedIn salespeople used their own abilities. Now the AI quickly does research and analysis. Called Crystal Candle by LinkedIn, it identifies actions and helps salespeople sell subscriptions and other services. LinkedIn said the explanation-based service has extended to more than 5,000 sales employees. It includes finding new workers, advertising, marketing, and educational offerings. It has helped experienced salespeople by arming them with specific insights, said Parvez Ahmad. He is LinkedIn's director of machine learning and head of data science applied research. But some AI experts question whether explanations are needed. I'm Dan Novak.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question from Leia from Vietnam. Hi, I'm Leia from Vietnam. I would like to know the difference between insane and crazy. Thank you so much, Leia. Dear Leia, I really appreciate the question. These two words may appear as synonyms in some situations, but in recent years, their usage and meanings have changed with increased knowledge of mental health issues. Let us start with crazy. Crazy is mostly used as an adjective and can have several different meanings that are informal. Its first meaning is foolish, strange, wild, or intense. The crazy kittens knocked over their water bowl because they were so excited. In this example, the kittens were a little wild and foolishly spilled the water. A second meaning of crazy is really enthusiastic, interested in, or in love with something. We usually use the preposition about with the word. The couple is crazy about each other. They are always holding hands. And crazy can also mean mentally sick or unbalanced. This meaning is falling out of use because now there is more awareness and sensitivity towards mental health issues. An example from recent years can be seen in the TV show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
She's the crazy ex-girlfriend.
What? No, I'm not.
She's the crazy ex-girlfriend.
That's a sexist term.
She's the crazy ex-girlfriend.
Can you guys stop singing for just a second?
She's so broken inside.
The song for the show is about the main character, Rebecca Bunch, an ex-girlfriend who is crazy and not doing well with her mental health. At the time, people criticized the use of crazy in the show's title. But the creator and star, Rachel Bloom, also helped to increase awareness of mental health issues through the TV show. Let's move on to insane. Insane has a stronger, more negative association than crazy. As an adjective, it was once used to describe people with severe mental illness, but it is no longer used in the field of medicine. Today, some people, especially younger ones, use it to mean extremely foolish, irrational, or not able to make good decisions. Those kinds of meanings are falling out of use. Another, more recent use as an adjective can mean shocking, outrageous, or intense. This meaning is similar to crazy. Compare these examples. I had an insane day at work. In this example, insane means intense and busy. The pasta sauce smells insane. Here, the sauce has an intense and wonderful smell. Crazy and insane as adjectives are used informally to mean foolish, intense, or not believable. If they are used this way, they can be synonyms. Insane is stronger and often sounds more negative than crazy. Crazy is more normal and informal speech when showing enthusiasm or even expressing love. But both terms have in the past been used to describe people with mental illnesses. While both terms are still used informally, saying them in the wrong situation can be a mistake. I hope these explanations and examples have helped you, Leia. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
Now, the weekly special English program, American Stories. Our story today is called The Line of Least Resistance. It was written by Edith Wharton. Here is Larry West with the story.
Mr. Minden returned home for lunch. His wife, Millicent, was not at home. The servants did not know where she was. Mr. Minden sat alone at the table in the garden. He ate a small piece of meat and drank some mineral water. Mr. Minden always ate simple meals because he had problems with his stomach. Why, then, did he keep a cook among his servants? Because his wife, Millicent, liked to invite her friends to big dinners and serve them rare and expensive food and wine. Mr. Minden did not enjoy his wife's parties. Millicent complained that he did not know how to enjoy life. She did a lot of things that he did not like. Millicent wasted Mr. Minden's money and was unpleasant to him, but he never got angry with his wife. After eating, Mr. Minden took a walk through his house. He did not stay long in the living room. It reminded him of all the hours he had spent there at his wife's parties. The sight of the formal dining room made him feel even more uncomfortable. He remembered the long dinners where he had to talk to his wife's friends for hours. They never seemed very interested in what he was saying. Mr. Minden walked quickly past the ballroom where his wife danced with her friends. He would go to bed after dinner, but he could hear the orchestra playing until 3 in the morning. Mr. Minden walked into the library. No one in the house ever read any of the books, but Mr. Minden was proud to be rich enough to have a perfectly useless room in his house. He went into the sunny little room where his wife planned her busy days and evenings. Her writing table was covered with notes and cards from all her friends. Her waste paper basket was full of empty envelopes that had carried invitations to lunches, dinners, and theater parties. Mr. Minden saw a letter crushed into a small ball on the floor. He bent to pick it up. Just as he was about to throw it into the waste paper basket, he noticed that the letter was signed by his business partner, Thomas Antrim. But Antrim's letter to Mr. Minden's wife was not about business. As Mr. Minden read it, he felt as if his mind was spinning out of control. He sat down heavily in the chair near his wife's little writing table. Now the room looked cold and unfamiliar. "Who are you?" the walls seemed to say. "Who am I?" Mr. Minden said in a loud voice. "I'll tell you who I am. I am the man who paid for every piece of furniture in this room. If it were not for me and my money, this room would be empty." Suddenly, Mr. Minden felt taller. He marched across his wife's room. It belonged to him, didn't it? The house belonged to him, too. He felt powerful. He sat at the table and wrote a letter to Millicent. One of the servants came into the room. "Did you call, sir?" he asked. "No," Mr. Minden replied. "But since you are here, please telephone for a taxi cab at once." The taxi took him to a hotel near his bank. A clerk showed him to his room. It smelled of cheap soap. The window in the room was open, and hot noises came up from the street. Mr. Minden looked at his watch. 4 o'clock. He wondered if Millicent had come home yet and read his letter. His head began to ache, and Mr. Minden lay down on the bed. When he woke up, it was dark. He looked at his watch. 8 o'clock. Millicent must be dressing for dinner. They were supposed to go to Mrs. Targe's house for dinner tonight. Well, Mr. Minden thought, Millicent would have to go alone. Maybe she would ask Thomas Antrim to take her to the party. Mr. Minden realized he was hungry. He left his room and walked down the stairs to the hotel dining room. The air, smelling of coffee and fried food, wrapped itself around his head. Mr. Minden could not eat much of the food that the hotel waiter brought him. He went back to his room, feeling sick. He also felt hot and dirty in the clothing he had worn all day. He had never realized how much he loved his home. Someone knocked at his door. Mr. Minden jumped to his feet. "Minden?" a voice asked. "Are you there?" Mr. Minden recognized that voice. It belonged to Lawrence Macy. 30 years ago, Macy had been very popular with women, especially with other men's wives. As a young man, he had interfered in many marriages. Now, in his old age, Lawrence Macy had become a kind of marriage doctor. He helped husbands and wives save their marriages. Mr. Minden began to feel better as soon as Lawrence Macy walked into his hotel room. 2 men followed him. One was Mr. Minden's rich uncle, Ezra Brownrigg. The other was the Reverend Dr. Bonifant, the minister of St. Luke's Church, where Mr. Minden and his family prayed every Sunday. Mr. Minden looked at the 3 men and felt very proud that they had come to help him. For the first time in his married life, Mr. Minden felt as important as his wife Millicent. Lawrence Macy sat on the edge of the bed and lit a cigarette. "Mrs. Minden sent for me," he said. Mr. Minden could not help feeling proud of Millicent. She had done the right thing. Macy continued, "She showed me your letter. She asks you for mercy." Macy paused and then said, "The poor woman is very unhappy, and we have come here to ask you what you plan to do." Now, Mr. Minden began to feel uncomfortable. "To do?" he asked. "To do? Well, I plan to leave her." Macy stopped smoking his cigarette. "Do you want to divorce her?" he asked. "Why, yes, Mr. Minden replied. Macy knocked the ashes from his cigarette. "Are you absolutely sure that you want to do this?" he asked. Mr. Minden nodded his head. "I plan to divorce her," he said loudly. Mr. Minden began to feel very excited. It was the first time he had ever had so many people sitting and listening to him. He told his audience everything, beginning with his discovery of his wife's love affair with his business partner, and ending with his complaints about her expensive dinner parties. His uncle looked at his watch. Dr. Bonifant began to stare out of the hotel window. Macy stood up. "Do you plan to dishonor yourself, then?" he asked. "No one knows what has happened. You are the only one who can reveal the secret. You will make yourself look foolish." Mr. Minden tried to rise, but he fell back weakly. The three men picked up their hats. In another moment, they would be gone. When they left, Mr. Minden would lose his audience and his belief in himself and his decision. "I won't leave for New York until tomorrow," he whispered. Lawrence Macy smiled. "Tomorrow will be too late," he said. "Tomorrow, everyone will know you are here." Macy opened the hotel room door. Mr. Brownrigg and Dr. Bonifant walked out of the room. Macy turned to follow them when he felt Mr. Minden's hand grab his arm. I will come with you," Mr. Minden sighed. It's for the children." Lawrence Macy nodded as Mr. Minden walked out of the room. He closed the door gently.
Have just heard the story, The Line of Least Resistance. It was written by Edith Wharton and adapted for Special English by Donna DeSanctis. Your storyteller was Larry West. For VOA Special English, this is Shep O'Neill.
That's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.